The outcry over the plan to amend Hong Kong's extradition law comes after a string of incidents that have concerned critics, from the disappearance of outspoken Hong Kong booksellers to the banning last year of Financial Times journalist Victor Mallet. But what about these promises of new human rights safeguards in the bill? Pooja Kapai is former director at the Centre for Comparative and Public Law and associate professor at the University of Hong Kong.
Well, I think one has to look at the events not as a one-off sort of proposal, but really against the backdrop of a series of recent incidents. For example, the disappearance of Hong Kong booksellers and then reappearing on the mainland, and their forced confessions made on television. We've also had the screening out of democratically elected lawmakers on the basis of their faulty sort of oath-taking, even though such oaths have been taken well in the past and they've had, you know, there's not been any problem with them taking up office. So it's sort of seen as though there has been a steady creep by Beijing into Hong Kong, you know, an encroachment into the human rights guarantees that have been protected under one country, two systems so far. But we now see that there is a steady erosion, and this bill represents everything that we've feared, you know, would creep in as we near towards 2047, only that it's arriving much, much sooner. I mean, it really opens the gate.
Hong Kong's judicial system is a common law system. We in Australia would recognise it as being similar to ours. Is it not robust enough to hold the line against any breaches of those fundamental freedoms?
I think that one, again, has to look at sort of the operational context of our particular common law system. You're absolutely right. It's very much on par with some of the best sort of, you know, stringent legal systems in the world with a very strong framework for the rule of law. However, again, past incidents give us pause to reconsider in light of the fact that there is in the basic law provision, for example, which gives the National People's Congress Standing Committee in Beijing the power of final interpretation of any particular provision in the basic law, if that is sort of a subject of concern in the proceedings. But that said, I mean, the other challenge, of course, is, you know, courts cannot decide, you know, when to stop a person's extradition request when it's made by the chief executive. They can only decide whether the requesting government has made out a prima facie case against the person and that the crime that they're suspected of is an offence, which is part of the list of offences covered by the proposed bill. And once those two sort of aspects are ticked, then there's really very little that the Hong Kong courts can do. It's very dissimilar to the UK position, for example, where an extradition order that is made by a minister can be challenged in court, for example, on the grounds that it's incompatible with his human rights, which we wouldn't be able to do in Hong Kong because the government is refusing to include guarantees pertaining to human rights, such as the right to fair trial, etc. And that's part of the anxieties that are triggered in the Hong Kong population. You know, they worry that the mainland legal system is not transparent, it's not robust in rule of law. So no matter the guarantees we have under our common law legal system here, once Hong Kong residents are sent to the mainland to be tried under that legal system, these guarantees fall away.
Is there, though, scope to reform the bill when it goes to the legislature on Wednesday?
There is definitely scope. However, the way in which the legislature is now sort of, the composition is such that, you know, in the past months, the government has managed to oust, using legal proceedings, democratically elected members of the opposition. It means now the government has a strong majority. And given the rules in terms of proposing sort of amendments in the legislature, the opposition camp wouldn't have the requisite number of votes, nor would it have the consent of the chief executive, which is what is required in order to move any of the amendments that they wish to. So, you know, Wednesday is really, it's pretty much a done deal.
If you can generalise, I mean, this is a place known for hard-headed money deals as much as anything else. What is the overall state of mind of Hong Kongers about this issue?
I mean, people tend to think that Hong Kongers are fairly apathetic politically and all of that. But as we've seen, not just now, but also in 2014 and back in 2003, when it really comes down to it, we greatly cherish our way of life, our freedoms, and particularly the one country, two systems framework that's been promised to us under the joint declaration after the handover. And we really see all of this being at stake with the passage of this particular bill. And the reason underlying that is, you know, the gross uncertainty that just creeps in, because there's no telling you know, who's going to be next. And with the way in which things have worked against particular political dissidents in Hong Kong, including being barred entry, for example, into Macau, or the banning of the Hong Kong National Party, the ousting of Victor Mallet, you know, these are things that were unheard of and unthinkable in Hong Kong. But the fact that all of that has happened and there's been absolutely nothing we could do about it, I think that spells for us that, you know, we are entering or have already entered into a phase of great uncertainty. And so the mood is very dreary. We also recognize that this is really the death of Hong Kong as the international community know it, because it will undermine investor confidence. And slowly, once people pull out their capital out of the territory, with our economic woes and our housing challenges, high rate of poverty, there really isn't very much to preserve.
Pooja Kapai from the University of Hong Kong.